Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest in the Executive Coaching Associates series of podcasts on all things Teams. I'm Ian Farrington of ProDev UK Limited, and I'm joined today by
Al Ritchie of Lateral Coaching.
And our focus today is around the question, how are you seen? Now, Al, that's an interesting question, but it's not one I hear asked very often when it comes to doing team analysis or team focus about where we should go next. So why that question?
Well, before I answer that, the first point is, I agree with you. It isn't often asked, but it's rather surprising that it isn't often asked, because the answer is, it's all about perspective. It's about our own perspective of ourselves. It's about how we perceive others. It's about how others perceive us. And all these things can be different. And they can all impact relationships. They can all impact productivity. They can all impact output, stakeholder relations, and so on and so forth.
That implies it's quite a big deal. So obviously teams are going to be conscious of that and working at managing that engagement, aren't they?
Oh, that's a nice idea. In all seriousness, I suspect an awful lot of teams aren't really aware of this. To give an example here, that many of us have been taught to give an elevator speech when we introduce ourselves, and that elevator speech can be anything up to 30 seconds long, typically. Now, long before 30 seconds have elapsed, the listener has either given up listening or is paying attention to something else or is completely enraptured by what you're saying. In reality, we each have 5 seconds to make an impression on somebody, or to flip that round the other way. Within 5 seconds, somebody has made up their mind about you, and you might not have even opened your mouth in those 5 seconds.
Now that's interesting. So what could be causing that then?
If I can use the term metaphor, we see somebody for the first time now, and this is even more pronounced when it's online than when it's face to face. And let me just go into that for a sec. When we're face to face, we've got use of pretty much all our senses, possibly even including touch, and when we shake hands. Now, if you shake hands with somebody and their hands all slimy, you've already formed an opinion about that person. Yeah. Now, maybe they're just a very nervous person for some good reason. We don't know, but we formed that opinion. When it's online, we've only got sight and sound, and we can typically only see somebody from shoulders up. So we've no idea how hard the feet are paddling below the surface, to want a phrase. So we look at somebody and we make up our mind about them as soon as we see them on the screen. They haven't opened their mouth. They haven't smiled. They haven't blinked. In 5 seconds, we've made up our mind based on our knowledge and understanding of people who look similar, or if we heard them before we saw them, or sound similar. It can take 5 seconds for that to form. It can be 5 weeks or more to break it down again with what is actually the case.
So here's the thing. Unless we find ourselves living in some weird kind of psychological dictatorship, we can't actually force someone to respond to us in a given way. But if we are at least alert to the idea that other people are thinking their own thoughts about how we present on camera or how we present in the room, what sort of things should we be thinking about individually, but also as a team, in terms of how we give ourselves the best chance of landing the right perception?
To me, the first thing that comes up out of this is probably feedback. The first time you and I met, you will have formed an impression of me within 5 seconds or so, regardless of whether I'd spoken or you'd just seen me on the screen, because that initial contact was over Zoom anyway. So you think of me in one way. I may think of myself in the same way. I think of you in one way. You may think yourself in the same way. We don't know. So the first thing to do is to find out. So I may think of myself as loving, generous, kind, forgiving. You may think me a vicious horror who has got the sense of humour that likes to pull the rug from under everybody else as often as possible. Hopefully not. The only honest way is we can find out how somebody thinks about us is through feedback. Now, there are various ways of handling that. That feedback can be anonymous. So you get a Here's an example. You ask all the members of the team to write down a short phrase about how they see you. But you don't know who's written what, and at some point you collect those up and you go through them. And some of those will be valid, some of them may be invalid, some may be somebody trying to pull a fast one, make an impression. So they all have to be looked at in terms of finding a median, shall we say. But at least you can get some, you get feedback that you can think about and you can discuss. As I said, the point about it is the validity of that feedback. The second thing is that we can think about ourselves and how we really are, as opposed to how we want to be. Often our perception of ourselves is how we would love people to perceive us, but we know it's not true. Or perhaps I should say, we're not sure it's true. So being honest with ourselves right from the start can make a very big difference in how we come over and narrowing the gap between how we are perceived by others and how we perceive ourselves. Now, once we've got something to compare ourselves with, then we can adjust how we act.
So I was smiling slightly there while you commented. As like you, I've run a number of these 360-degree feedback exercises with a range of clients. And I think what it showed very quickly is, however much we put on a brave face, actually we all do care about how we're seen. Oh. We're all quite sensitive about how we're seen. But I think for me, what that plays back is actually, if you're going to make good use of feedback, if you're going to use that at the individual level, but also play that into how the team is seen, you probably need to be thinking about three things. Warn about being courageous. Actually stand up and be willing to hear what's said. Two, be curious. Actively seek the feedback. Actively seek to understand how people are seeing you. And three, listen.
Agree with you 100% on all of those. When I'd said asking for feedback, I had actually assumed that those three were in place, because if you're not courageous, you won't ask for the feedback. You'll live in your own little world and make assumption on top of assumption and carry on, and nothing will change. And things might be fine. Things might be really, really bad. Curious goes along with that. You're not going to ask for feedback unless you're curious anyway. So I'd already assumed those two.
I think also there's a practical point here that, having worked in a lot of large organizations, there are lots of processes, and inevitably there is a feedback process. All too often for busy individuals or busy teams, what happens is you run through the process because you know you have to complete the process because that's the requirement. And what we then start to miss is the reason the process is a requirement is because there is valuable outside there for you.
Yeah, sure. I agree with that one too. My background, as you know, is rather different. Most of my work has been in smaller companies in fairly niche business areas. When we had teams there, then one of the very first thing was to make sure we knew about each other, where we're coming from, why we're there, and their personal likes, dislikes, and a whole load of other things. And most of those teams were multinational. So you'd be crossing not necessarily countries, but continents. Those people would be, some of them would be local, some would be remote. So if you like, it was hybrid working long before the term hybrid working was coined.
Yeah.
So yeah, all those things come into play.
Okay. So we seem to have identified a phenomenon. I suppose what we're talking about is a subconscious conversation.
Yeah.
That happens when we interact with other people. And we've talked a little bit about what that means at the individual level. Thinking about this now in a team's context, it feels then that you've actually got two things to think about. One is how that subconscious conversation happens between team members and what might be the risks and opportunities of that. But also then how the team collectively thinks about how it tries to improve and be more accurate in the way it is seen. And I wonder what your thoughts were about those ideas.
I prefer to work with examples because they work better in my head. So let's take the example of somebody who's been appointed a team leader, and they have a distinct lack of patience, but they don't like to admit it. Now, this was quite possibly me 20 years ago, because I was very impatient. I wanted everything done yesterday. Luckily, I learned from that one. So it's about being honest about that. I knew I was like that. So I discussed that facet of myself with everybody else on the team. And everybody else on the team discussed on how it impacted them and made them feel. And we went round that loop, and then we did it for other people within the team. Now, this was a very informal way of doing it, as opposed to using something like a joint 360. But in the end, you come to a situation where at least everybody responds to people as expected, and they don't do the typical thing you see in teams where you've really made a faux pas and the person next to you turns his or her head away from you, crosses their legs, crosses their arms, and shuts up entirely, because you have then lost that person for a very, very long time.
So you're given about to
say something. Sorry.
So I just wondered, given that we're talking about examples, whether you had examples then of people who have genuinely been surprised by this process.
Definitely. And on multiple occasions, and usually in a very positive way. An awful lot of us don't rate ourselves as highly as we should do. I think a lot of us have built-in lack of self-confidence. As a result, we don't think of ourselves particularly good. And in a team situation where we're fulfilling one particular role, let's say you've got a team of five people, six people, you, whoever you are, have a very distinct and specific role to play within that team, along with all the general team stuff that we have to do. And somebody writes on a post-it note that you are the most open-minded person they've ever come across. And you've not thought of that for yourself. So there are some very, very positive things that typically come out of that process. And that also helps the team gel. It's the negative things that come out. If they're said in a negative way, those are the ones where you actually create damage. So it has to be fairly careful around the process and how the questions are answered. If someone was to write about somebody else that they were a rude blank, 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 swear words all over the place, it's not actually going to help the situation. But if it's turned round, so I find the use of certain words rather upsetting. As not necessarily a very good example, you understand where I'm coming from there. Then the person who tends to use those words, oh, I didn't mean to upset anybody, and they moderate their behavior. So this is back to that word adjustment that we mentioned a while ago.
But I think also that there's a really important point here. As you started into this, you said it's about conversation.
Absolutely.
But actually, that's not just a nice fireside chat or, you know, over the cooler drinks. This is about managing a constructive conversation.
Oh, yeah.
To put people in the right place. I think it's just worth being clear about that, because I think people can lull themselves into a sense of security that everybody has a chat over Friday morning coffee, therefore we all understand each other.
Not a chance in hell.
No, what we're talking about is something rather more structured and deliberate,
I think, isn't it? Yeah, okay. To me, a conversation is where one is thinking about what one's saying. We don't have a glass of wine or cream teas or whatever it is to hand. We're sitting there discussing something. We're being serious about it, but in a conversational way. So in other words, if it's made heavy, it's not going to work. If it's flippant, it's not going to work. You need to be able to pitch somewhere in the range where we're conversing, we're all listening, we're all paying attention. And that takes effort on everybody's part. And if that effort is not made by an individual within the team, then they're really excluding themselves from the team. And that then set up another train of concerns, because if they're excluding themselves, they become excluded by others as well, because that's what they're looking to do. That's a whole other conversation or a whole other topic, which is probably not for now, but you get the point I'm trying to make here. That
I think we do get onto it at some point.
okay.
But that's a really useful insight, I think, into that whole question of within team dynamics and the team for itself actually calibrating that sort of more appropriate, more consistent, more realistic understanding and appreciation of each other. So having looked in, I guess next question is now let's look out.
I think there's somewhere in between the two.
Okay.
Because how a team presents itself to the outside world and how a team presents itself to itself as a team can have nothing to do with each other. So we've talked about the individuals in the team and having conversations about perceptions and likes, dislikes, all that sort of stuff. But in the process of that and coming together as a team that understands each other, we've generated our own team feeling, our own team identity. And so we could use a sporting analogy if you wanted, so a football team or hockey team or whatever it must be. We are the whatever it is team, and that's how we present ourselves to ourselves. How we present ourselves as a team to the outside could be we're the go-getters, we're the we don't take no for an answer team, we're the friendly people who are here to help you, whatever it happens to be, and whatever we want to project. So that then impacts the perception of the people outside the team on how we are as a team. And that can obviously be manipulated by those who are into that sort of thing, so that the team projection is one of, let's step back just for a second. I'll explain where I'm coming to here. There can be a conscious choice, not a subconscious choice, in how a team presents itself to the outside.
Yes.
In some cases, that really amounts to manipulation. Let us say a team is being less than effective for one, doesn't matter why, for one reason or another. But the team needs to look unified and positive. So the external image of the team is manipulated to represent that on a conscious basis. That, in turn, can create all sorts of problems for the organization. And if, for example, it's an executive on the smaller end of the SME scale, can be disastrous. So again, another word that comes up again is about honesty, which we mentioned right back at the beginning of this conversation. But putting aside the manipulation aspect of this for the moment, how a team projects itself to the outside world, not only within the organization, but there may be relationships external to the organization, how that team presents itself completely impacts how those outside entities react and respond and work with the team. So if the team comes over as open, honest, can do, and all those positive terms, then the reaction they're likely to get from the people they're interfacing with is going to be positive coming back. If the team comes over as, no, won't do it, or we're not customer support, or that type of thing, then the interactions are going to be negative. None of this is exactly rocket science, is it?
It isn't, but I think that there's an interesting point over time in some of this, that of course, it isn't necessarily wrong to have what you might call a manufactured team persona. But I think that, but there is a risk. I'll finish the point and then we'll come back to it. I think there is then a risk. If you manufacture a persona that you don't then live up to, that seems likely to cause all kinds of damage to how you're seen and therefore how you're able to work with others.
The point I was making about manufacturing an image, I actually said manipulating. Mm-hmm. And manipulation, I think, generally is seen as not a positive thing to do. If you manufacture an image and you live up to it, that's one thing, and that's absolutely fine. If you say, regardless of anything else, we are going to provide the best customer service this company has ever seen. You're a customer service team, for sake in this case. And you do provide that, the best customer service this company has ever seen, then that's absolutely wonderful, and you'll be applauded left, right, and center. If you say, we need to look as if we're the best customer service team, but actually we'll do what we can, but we're not going to make any commitments, then you're going to get called out. It's a very different thing. So manipulation is different from manufacture.
Yes, that's fair. begs an interesting question from there, of course, that teams tend to be dynamic beings, so people do change in and out of teams.
Very much so.
Suggests this whole question needs to be revisited.
Oh, absolutely. It's an ongoing process. And I would actually take it a little further than that. Even within a team that is fairly, I was going to say static, but that is just completely wrong, because a team is never static. Even if the members of the team don't change, then people within that team change through their own experiences within the team and out with the team. So you introduce somebody new to a team, that person needs to get up to speed in terms of the team dynamics in a very short space of time. So they need to understand how other people work. They need to go through the feedback loop. They need to basically become fully integrated. When somebody leaves a team, there's a hole. Now, there's two ways that can go after that. One is that the other people in the team double down and fill the gap in an interim period, or maybe a long-term period. The other one is that somebody is going to be introduced. So first of all, the team has to cope with the lack of that person. Now, that person may have been the most dynamic person on the team. And that then means we've got a problem. We've got to be able to generate that dynamism to move forward from within the existing team members. So it's a working together type of situation. The other end of the spectrum is that that was the person who was the, to use one of my favorite terms, a completer finisher. Now, I know this is a Belgian term, but completer finishers are those people you have to have on a team, somebody who's going to dot every I and cross every T. Because if you haven't got one of those, then there's a good chance the quality of the output's not going to be where it should be. Mm-hmm. If you lose your completer finisher, again, everybody has to adapt and adjust to cope with that situation. That completer finisher is gone. The management has seen fit to add to a team somebody who's a loud go-getter. Is that team going to have the same dynamic? No. Is the team going to be functioning the same way? No. At least not to start with. So we have to go back round that loop that we talked about to do with all the feedback stuff. Mm-hmm. Learning about each other. If you've got a team of five, then that's fairly easy to do because you're only interacting with four other people. We've only got four interfaces. Everybody's got four interfaces to deal with. As if that team's a big team, and I know your view is that if it's more than six, you're pushing your luck. Mine is more like if it's into double digits, you're pushing your luck. But if you do hear teams of 20 people. Now, you may think that if one person is replaced in the team of 20, well, that's only 5% of the team. That's easy. No, it's not. It's much harder because everybody has then got 19 different interfaces. And you may think that, yeah, but sure, but 18 of those haven't changed, only the 19th have. But all of them are impacted because of the person who's come in, how they perceive themselves and how you perceive them, the role that they're taking on, the way that they act, their persona. Does that help?
Absolutely. And it made me smile slightly, and it's coming back to this idea of examples. There does tend to be an assumption that we have to be wary of the big differences, and it's the big voices, and when they move on that things really matter. Actually, for many of us in practice, what we really notice when it comes to it is the little stuff. And you maybe think, as you were describing it, of being in one team where there was chaos for a whole morning because somebody moved on from the team and they did all the good team things that they needed to do. But the thing that absolutely floored everybody is they had the passcode for the tea and coffee cupboard.
Yeah, you don't surprise me.
And something as silly as that, and it sounds stupid, but actually it's a very good flag that it's not all about the big stuff, and it's not necessarily all about the stuff that's written into the team objective or the team mission or the team ways of working.
Absolutely. In return, I'd like to give you a practical example from a team I was on. This is going back a bit. But anyway, one person on the team slurped their tea, and one person on the team ended up shouting at them, "Will you stop doing that?" because it infuriated them so much.
There we go.
Yeah, well, exactly. But if they had discussed something around that or said something earlier, then the whole thing could have been diffused and it would have become a non-event. Either the person who slurped the tea would have stopped, or the other person would have said, fine, he's not going to stop. I just have to live with it. But not having had that conversation up front. I know we're revisiting bits we talked about before, but it's just an example of that.
No, and of course, the passive-aggressive solution is just to bring in straws, but that's maybe another conversation. So there's some fascinating stuff here. And I just wonder, and maybe it's the last sort of thing we delve into for today, if we might just flip the lens. In that we've talked about the team, we've talked about the team looking in on itself, we've talked about the team understanding the impact it has on others. Now that we're a bit more aware of some of these issues and some of these things we can do, if we flip the lens, how might that inform how we as a team receive approaches from other teams?
That's a good question. When a politician says it, means they haven't the faintest idea how to answer. In my case, I think I do. We have to interact with other teams on the same basis that we interact with ourselves and with our stakeholders and with the people that are in our... Okay, example time. I apologize for using yet another example, but it tends to be easier for me to describe things.
But easier for everybody else too, so just go ahead.
Okay, that's cool. Okay, so we have an exec of a small company. Let's say there's five people on the exec. The small company has 20, 30 employees in total. So each person on the exec has their own team. So there's a small finance team, there's a small production team, there's a small design team. So each of those teams that the exec are representing interface with all the other execs because it's a small company. You've only got 25, 30 people in the team. Everybody knows each other. So when somebody on the design team is unhappy with somebody on the finance team, because they're not getting the budget that they want to design something, and they're not going to go up through the design director and then who goes over to the CFO and down because we don't like pyramids, then that interaction between the teams or between the specific members of the teams is absolutely crucial. How we perceive the designers as finance, well, they just take all our money and they spend it on ideas and they don't bother to think about it. How the designers perceive the finance team. Well, what they expect us to do with 30 quid and a box of cardboard bits. In other words, we have made assumptions about those teams, our ready-made perceptions of what a finance team are, what a design team is. The team that typically gets it in the neck is the sales team, especially by those who are in things like production or in finance. Or even in legal, they're going out and they're selling our box of widgets below cost price. Well, there's probably a reason they're doing that. Have you thought to ask? Back to communications. We've made an assumption. This is our perception of salespeople. They do that. Production team have slightly changed the way something looks. It's been agreed all the way up and down the chain, but the sales team don't like it. Because instead of being greeny grey, it's now grey green. And it's not going to match. Now, there may be a very good reason behind that, but the sales team is, they've just used whatever's cheapest. How we act with other teams and how we represent our team to other teams is just as crucial as how we represent ourselves within a team, within the organisation.
And that, to me, feels like quite a powerful point to stop on, I think. Because we've covered a lot of ground today. Thank you. It's been lots of insight. And I think just to recap, we started off with that seemingly innocent question, how are you seen? And actually, you see quite quickly that beneath that lies a whole issue around perception and the way that perception shapes team and inter-team dynamics. And worryingly, for most people, it's that recognition, in fact, all that is done through a subconscious conversation that happens in about 5 seconds flat.
Yeah, exactly.
And if we want to get beyond that, we really need to be aware of that issue. We need to be engaged in that issue, and in particular, looking for feedback. And I think, as we saw, feedback isn't just about going through the motions of a process. It's about being courageous. It's about being curious. It's about really listening if you're going to take things away from that. And I think more broadly, moving on to the realization that teams perhaps inevitably have multiple personas. And they might be emergent or they might be shaped. They could be authentic, they could be manipulated. And we've got choices in how we want to do that, and there are risks and opportunities in how we do that. But taking control of that dialogue, I think, takes it into a much more interesting place, which also then, I think, helps inform how we prepare to react and engage with other people and other teams. So quite a lot in there to think about. Now, is there anything else you want to say before we finish today?
Just one little thing. Mm. Where does that 5 seconds come from? Fight or flight?
I suggest you shouldn't have coffee before getting into a lift.
Thanks, Ian. I've enjoyed this conversation.
Thanks, Al. That's been great fun. Thank you all for listening. Hope you found that insightful, and we'll spark some more conversation for yourselves. And don't forget, we are supporting this with a whole series of podcasts, and there will be webinars and seminars to support in due course. So do check us out at executivecoachingassociates.co.uk. Thank you. And for today, goodbye.
Cheerio.